Welcome back to another episode of Palisade Radio. I'm your host, Karem Mutlu. And on today's show, we have Brent Johnson, who's the CEO of Santiago Capital. Welcome to the show, Brent.
Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to talking to you.
Let's begin by going over your background and how you began your career within the markets. I'd like to understand what led you to the commodity space in general and also precious metals. How did you begin?
Sure. So I guess, my interest in precious metals probably started back in the 80s when I was a kid. And it all goes back to the fact that, you know, I don't know if people remember this or not, but in the late 70s and early 80s, there was this, you know, amateur metal detecting kind of craze that went on. And, you know, people would get metal detectors and they'd go to beaches and parks and stuff and, you know, search for, you know, anything metal that may be of value. And my dad was kind of an amateur, metal sleuth, for lack of a better word. And he had a metal detector that he would go, you know, look at different places where a large crowd had been and, you know, try to pick up a nickel here and there. And one time he found a dime that was a 1915 mercury dime that was kind of out of issue. And this dime was worth over $1,000. And I could never quite get my head around the fact that a dime was worth $1,000, and, you know, the fact that it was worth silver made it worth more, but then there was a collectible valuable as well. And so that kind of, I guess I always had in the back of my mind this, this interest in that probably piqued it initially. So it wasn't a totally foreign idea to me, but I didn't start my career in the markets until 1999. I started with a firm called Donaldson, Lufkin and Jenrette in New York City. I went through their Wall Street training program. And, you know, I didn't know anything. I thought I knew everything. And they proceeded to teach me that I didn't know everything. and I got a very good, it's funny because, you know, some of the stuff they taught me turned out to be wrong or definitely one-sided. And, but I got a very good training on how people on Wall Street think. And that, you know, that served me fairly well later in life, I think. I moved with Donaldson, Lufkin and Jenrette from New York City to San Francisco in the summer of 2000. And about a month after I got to San Francisco, Credit Suisse bought Donaldson, Lufkin and Jenrette for, I think it was like $13 billion. It was kind of at the top of the tech boom. And, you know, we proceeded to have a tech crash. And I think perhaps Credit Suisse realized $1 billion of value out of that $13 billion purchase, if they're lucky. But, you know, such is life. So I was with Credit Suisse for about 10 years until the end of 2009. I was with Credit Suisse, you know, managing money for high net worth individuals, mostly in the Bay Area, but, you know, a few outside California as well. And really kind of became disillusioned with Wall Street overall after the financial crisis. And I can go into a reason why that was, but ultimately decided that, you know, I didn't want to be part of a big Wall Street firm anymore. And in 2009, at the end of 2009, I left Credit Suisse and took my clients and moved to a firm called Baker Avenue Asset Management, which a friend of mine had started a couple of years earlier. And I was there for a long time. While I was there, I started Santiago Capital because I had a couple other business lines I was doing as far as some commodity investing, some precious metals investing. I was doing some advising to some hedge funds. And then ultimately, I transferred my entire wealth management business under the Santiago banner. So that's kind of the genesis of it. I think it's a fantastic place to be as far as, you know, knowing what's going on in the world, you know, having a challenge put in front of you, trying to help people. But it can be frustrating at times. It's not always easy. And, you know, if you can't deal with disappointment, it probably is not a job for you. But that's kind of how I got my starts, and I've really enjoyed my career. I've seen so many bear markets. I don't know if you divide it by 3 years or 10 years, it depends on how you calculate it. We've had a pretty good bull run here, and I just think it gets more interesting and more interesting the further we get into it. So I love it. I know some people are kind of sick of the markets the way they are, but I'm actually having fun.
Excellent. Okay, let's move on to gold in particular then. Let's get your current thoughts on the current price action. Do you view the 1360, the 1370 dollar area as key? And now that we are currently over it, what does that signal to you? For other currencies, gold for the last few years has actually been very strong. But in dollar terms, it feels as though the world needs to see gold significantly break out before continuation of the bull market continues. So what are your thoughts on gold today, Brent?
Yeah, no, so I do think that that level was very important. You know, it had bumped up against that level, you know, the past 3 years and rejected it. And this year it kind of finally broke through it fairly forcefully. I do think that regardless of whether the bull market has started or whether the bull market or whether the bull bear market is not yet over, I do think that we will revisit that 1360 to 1380 range at some point. And I think that's going to be the real test. If we can go back down there, hold, and then ramp back up to kind of current levels or higher and kind of stay up there for a month or so, then I would say that, you know, it's likely that the bear market is over. But it kind of depends on what else is going on in the world when that happens. You know, I am not yet convinced that we're out of the woods on gold. Now, you know, I say that and people get very mad at me sometimes. And, you know, before I go on to my reasons why I'm not convinced yet, I should say that I'm a huge proponent for owning gold in your portfolio. I think everybody should have it to some degree in their portfolio. Now, how much each person has and in what form and all that kind of stuff, it kind of depends on personal circumstances. So I can't give a general, you know, percentage, but I think everybody should own some. Now, just because I think everybody should own some doesn't necessarily mean I think it's going to pay off right now. I think largely people should own physical gold as an insurance policy against the hubris of central bankers and the, you know, the craziness of this system that we have in place, because it is guaranteed to fail. But that doesn't mean that it's going to fail tomorrow. Doesn't mean it's going to fail next month or next year. It will. I'm absolutely convinced of that. But I don't know that it happens in the same timeline as many other proponents for gold. So I'm a huge believer in gold. I think gold will eventually go to at least $5,000. I'm just not convinced it's going to happen next year.
Very good. So over the years in your career, Brent, would you say it is harder to be a contrarian within the markets today? What I mean by that is in terms of there being more information via social media and other outlets. Is there perhaps more noise or too much information that could affect your trades or outlook? How do you deal with this?
Yeah, that's a very good question. There's no question that there is more information available right now. As much information as you want, you can get. To a certain extent, it can actually hurt you to a certain extent because it becomes such a fire hose that maybe you're grabbing just a little bit of a lot of information rather than really understanding the important, narrower information. I think it's still possible to be a contrarian, but I think many times people think they're being a contrarian when in fact they're not. You know, there's a guy named Rick Rule who, you know, many people in the gold world know, and rightfully so. I always kind of refer to him as the Mick Jagger of the natural resource world. You know, you go to a conference and there's a line a mile long just to say hi to him. And I'm fortunate enough to know Rick, and I consider him a friend. And, you know, he told me several years ago, he said to be successful in this business, you either need to be a contrarian or you're going to be a victim. And he says that all the time. And I'm not going to put words in his mouth. I don't know if he feels this way, but I've kind of come to believe over the last 6 or 7 years that he doesn't just mean that as far as, you know, people that own gold versus the rest of the world. I've come to understand that, you know, I think a lot of people in the gold world own gold, own the gold miners, and therefore they naturally think that they're contrarian because most of the rest of the world does not. But the fact is that I think you need to be contrarian versus everybody else in the gold world itself. If you're buying when everybody else in the gold world is buying, you know, you're not really being a contrarian. Like my opinion right now, buying gold right now is not the contrarian trade. Sentiment is as high as it has been since the highs in 2011. Okay. Now that does not mean that gold won't break out here. Gold may very well break out here. And I think it's going much higher, but right now, it is not a contrarian trade. Right now, it is very much a trend trade, an in-trend trade. I mean, even when the CNBC guys are telling you to go buy GDX, you know it's no longer a contrarian trade. And so my point is that, you know, if you're going to be a contrarian in the gold industry or in the natural resources industry or really any industry, you know, you really have to be a contrarian against a lot of your fellow peers who are alongside you. And I think that's, if you can be a contrarian alongside your fellow peers and get the call right, that's when you can really make a lot of money. So I think that's kind of my view on whether it's, you know, what it's like to be a contrarian these days. Because the internet and because all this information is out there, it's very easy to find a community in your space, right? You know, whether you're, you know, a Tesla bull or a Tesla bear, or whether you're a silver bull or a silver bear, you know, you go online and after a few clicks, you can find a bunch of people who agree with you. And so I think you need to, I think to a certain extent, because there's so much information out there, it's good in that you have all this information, but it's also bad in that it's very easy to get caught in a silo and get caught in an echo chamber to where you may think you're a contrarian, but really you're not. So I think you have to be very much on guard as to whether or not your thesis is a contrarian one or not.
Okay, let's move on to talking about some books or authors that have proved key to your development of your career, Brent, over the years. And what are you currently reading today?
Yeah, well, you know, I think what really kind of got me started in the commodity part of having a commodity allocation was probably back in the early to mid 2000s. You know, in business school, I'd read Investment Biker by Jim Rogers. And then I think in 2005 or 2006, he put out Hot Commodities. And I think so he was definitely instrumental in my thinking and understanding that, you know, you don't just have to focus on, you know, stocks and bonds. There's many other asset classes out there. You know, I also grew up in a little town in the state of Nebraska, which is very much an agricultural state. And so a lot of my friends and their families were farmers or ranchers. And so I always had, you know, exposure to people that were growing corn or wheat or raising cattle. And, you know, they would talk about the prices of this or that and the cost of to feed the cattle or to feed the hogs. So I kind of always had a little bit of anecdotal exposure to commodities. So I was always somewhat, I guess, sympathetic to having that as part of your asset allocation. You know, but Jim Rogers certainly was a big impact on, you know, applying it, you know, in my career. As far as gold specifically, like I said, I'd always kind of had an interest in it. You know, Jim had obviously talked about gold, but other people talked about gold as well. You know, Jim Rickards has written several books, of course. Around 2010 or 11, my friend John Butler wrote a book called The Golden Revolution, which I thought was fantastic. And I thought he did a very good job of, you know, crystallizing a lot of the thoughts that I was thinking about. You know, there's a number of people who've written gold. There's a book called Gold Wars by a name Ferdinand Lips, I think is his name. And that kind of talked about the history of it a little bit. But I, other than those specific books, I don't really have one source. You know, back in when I kind of started getting into gold and silver as a way to hedge the entire monetary system, you know, this was not the early days of the internet, but certainly in the early days of the blogosphere, you know, and there were many nights where I was up at, you know, 10, 11, 12, 1 o'clock in the morning, you know, searching these obscure websites, just trying to get as much information as I could, because it wasn't something that was talked about in the halls of Credit Suisse. You know, we didn't talk about, you know, commodities or precious metals or the monetary system being under threat, you know, in our board meetings, on Wall Street. So, you know, it was very much a thing of self-discovery and self-education, I guess is the right way to say it. And, you know, I can't really pinpoint one source. I do remember reading a book called Empire of Debt by Bill Bonner. I want to say it was in 2006 or seven, somewhere in that time frame. And that kind of helped me crystallize my belief that there was going to be some kind of a global slowdown. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that I called the crash, because I didn't. And I certainly wasn't smart enough back then to figure out that it was going to be the banks that paid the price. So I didn't really profit from the crash, but I did think that something was going to go wrong. I did think that there was going to be a downturn. And so that helped me navigate it, I think, a little bit better than some of my peers. But, you know, that was definitely a big eye-opening, experience for me, too, because, you know, I was at one of the top firms in the world. You know, Credit Suisse has been around for 150 years. And, you know, they have this, you know, rich tradition of Swiss banking and sophistication. And we're the smartest people, or the smartest and the wealthiest people in the world, come to us for advice. And, you know, Credit Suisse as a whole got it completely wrong, you know, and they, you know, ultimately I left Credit Suisse because of a disagreement I had with my boss over whether or not I was a salesman for the firm or whether I was a fiduciary for my client. And, you know, I mentioned Credit Suisse because that's the firm I worked for, but it's the same at all the firms. It wouldn't have mattered if I was at Merrill or Goldman or Morgan Stanley. That's the business model. And so I think as I got smarter along the way and I, you know, some of the Kool-Aid that I drank in my Wall Street trading program started to wear off and I started to think about things more from a big picture perspective. And I started to this, you know, self-discovery of, you know, about commodities and gold and silver and kind of alternative systems that, you know, that I just kind of became not enamored with the idea, but I came to a deeper understanding of the way the system itself actually worked. And the importance of having some assets outside the system, you know, in case the system doesn't work out, what are you going to do? And I think that that's, you know, obviously coming to that understanding was a huge impact on me and having an exposure to gold or silver or some other real assets.
Okay, as we begin to wrap up, Brent, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners today?
You know, I think the biggest thing is that listen, I'm not telling anybody to sell their gold or silver. I think everybody should own it. I just think you got to be careful of not getting caught in an echo chamber. It's very easy when you have an investment that maybe hasn't turned out exactly the way that you thought it would, or maybe it's caused you a few sleepless nights, that when people start telling you what you want to hear and that, you know, that makes that investment sound better, it's very comforting. And listen, that may very well be right. If you have the staying power and you can hold on to your gold or your silver or whatever, your mining stocks, gold is going to be in a bull market. And gold, I believe, is going to go to $5,000. But I don't think anybody should ever have, you know, 100% of their money in any one thing. So just because, you know, everybody in the blogosphere and the gold industry or whatever it is telling you, you know, you need to be, you know, all the way into gold right now, it doesn't mean you have to be. You know, the same thing goes for stocks. Just because, you know, we've been in this long bull market and, you know, people on CNBC are telling you need to have exposure to stocks. No, you don't. You don't have to. But I guess what I would say is, you know, you have to think for yourself. Now, I know not everybody has the time or the energy, the expertise to do all this research on their own. And therefore, you have to rely, you know, to on other experts to provide you with this information. But I think you need to have a diversified source of information. You know, you can't just listen to one person. You can't just listen to people that you agree with. You have to force yourself to listen to people that you disagree with, because that's where you're going to learn. And that's where you're going to see possibilities that you never previously thought were even in the realm of possibility. It doesn't necessarily mean they're going to play out, but I think it'll help you understand the different pathways to whatever eventuality you think is going to happen. So I would just, you know, caution everybody to do their own homework, make up your own mind, think for yourself, and, you know, good luck.
Well, thank you very much for your time today, Brent, and I'm sure we'll have you back on the show very soon.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Think you understand the junior mining sector and you think that the participants in the mining sector, junior mining sector, are good people and kind people, hit the bid.
How violent that term could be, it actually could be quite violent. It could be a rip your face off uranium rally.
And the world is always going to need raw materials. It's going to need copper and gold and nickel and so forth.
Totally destabilized. Hey, troll, did you hear what's going on in Yemen?